Sports Professor Rick Haro. Welcome to Beyond the Scoreboard, the inside look at the deal-making in business and law and marketing of the trillion-dollar business of sports, probably even higher than $1 trillion right now. And this is the time we all love. Yeah, Red Sox are beginning week three. The Bruins in the playoffs, the Celtics angling for the next series of rounds and the dollars that comes along with it. The Patriots looking to steal away the next draft pick that other people could only dream about. We also have some other major events coming up. The Indy 500, the Kentucky Derby. We'll cover all of that today, but if you want to see the list of the top 15 items of the week, CSNNE.com. Look at our published list as we do on a regular basis. Also, subscribe to our iTunes feed. Look for us on Stitcher, Google Play, Audio Boom, and the like, and you'll be really informed coming up. This is the week where you ought to be informed. And we also have Angela Ruggiero, the Chief Strategy Officer of LA 2024, but so much more. Harvard, U.S. Olympic team, international ambassador for hockey. What a great peg to start the NHL playoffs and the Bruins. She has a lot of opinions on women's hockey professionally, what the NHL is doing as far as Korea is concerned, and on and on and on. But first, let's look at some of the big issues this week. And always we got to start with football, and we finally have a deal in Vegas, and we can deal with that as far as everybody is concerned. And Mark Davis said he's not celebrating anything like he would like to be. He's got a feeling for the fans in the Bay Area, he said, and he's met a number of them. Anything I'd say to them isn't going to soothe them, and it makes the whole thing bittersweet. Well, maybe the $1.7 billion stadium makes it a little better. 20% of the franchise as part of the transaction might happen as far as the Oakland A's are concerned, but the Oakland Raiders never presented a viable plan to keep the team. Back in 2013, the Raiders began talks about trying to find a new stadium in Oakland with the A's, but those talks didn't go anywhere. The A's signed a 10-year deal to stay in the Coliseum. It's Oakland's turn to save its last remaining professional sports franchise. And the A's stadium process takes on a new political, economic, and psychological significance. And for you New England sports fans, it also tells you how important it was and how comfortable you should be about Robert Kraft, Gillette Stadium, Patriot Place, and the Patriots. Speaking of Gillette Stadium, new NFL stadiums built in L.A. and Vegas in the coming years, naming rights records could be rewritten. The Rams-Chargers Stadium, some predict, could bring up to $20 million annually, maybe even 30, driven by an incredible stadium and the L.A. market. Remember, MetLife's contract with the Giants and the Jets pays out about $16 to $25 million a year, and then Vegas could fetch between $15 and $18 million a year for 20 years. Certainly, those numbers will soothe Mark Davis' angsts over leaving the Bay Area. With the economy improving, digital media values increasing, corporate hospitality becoming more significant, look for a major deal in L.A. and then be emulated in Vegas. The NFL continues to strive for its $25 billion a year annually, and they're looking at new revenue streams to get there. Continuing a highlighted shift in the dynamics of live sports streaming, Amazon takes over the streaming of Thursday Night Football, 1-year deal with the NFL, about $50 million, a massive spike from the $10 million Twitter paid this past season. The live-streamed 10 Thursday night games carried by CBS and NBC, they beat out Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube for the rights. The NFL deal will allow the company to do that, put its sports rights on Amazon's Prime Video service and available to Prime subscribers. Twitter's 1-year deal with the league, considered to be a success. Games average about 250,000 viewers on average basis, minute basis during the season. Amazon expected to have a wider reach, obviously. New media companies are all positioning themselves to assess their role as a major media player in subsequent bidding cycles for major league rights in the future. We thought DirecTV was silly when it bid. How about the next round, including Amazon, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Snapchat, and the like? Unlikely? Not so fast. Now, what about in the booth? Tony Romo wearing a suit next season, not a quarterback's uniform. 2017 season. He supplants Phil Sims. Asked if he's ever planning on returning to football, Romo said, never say never. Another pro athlete in the broadcast booth. And salaries for these athletes turned broadcasters continue to increase as the games themselves become more significant. Look for the amateur ranks to give us a little bit of comfort. But wait, not really true. How about college sports? Well, first of all, after receiving a large amount of criticism, the Big Ten decided to cut back its Friday night broadcast schedule for this next season. Long list of parties been complaining to the conference ever since it's announced that TV partners would start broadcasting games on Friday nights. Six contests after the opening Labor Day weekend. Of those six games originally intended to be played on Friday, two rescheduled for Saturday. Friday night games traditionally draw lower ratings than Saturday. General lack of interest, primetime high school games, other sporting events. And many mid-major conferences historically played games on Friday night because they're often overshadowed elsewhere and they want to get a moment in the sun. But no doubt a trend reversal. Many leagues and conferences attempt to identify open times in their schedule, and in this case, it may be pushback more than anticipated. Something that happened as a result of pushback is good for everybody. State of North Carolina deciding to repeal HB2, and the NCAA officially lifted its championship ban on North Carolina. The state, of course, faced sharp criticism ever since it passed HB2. The bill nullified the Charlotte LGBT non-discrimination ordinance, and the NCAA currently picking future championship sites for 18 through 22. Charlotte bidding to host the men's basketball tournament games at the Spectrum Center for 3 years, 2020, 21, and 22. And the championship sites for the next year are final, meaning Charlotte still set to host the first and second rounds of the men's basketball tournament at the Spectrum Center in March of next year. From a political perspective, sports has to be viewed as big business. That is not a shocker, ladies and gentlemen, in Massachusetts or anywhere else. And cities and states that have lost conventions, concerts, and major sporting events because of the unpopular political stances they've taken. Just like Arizona and its Martin Luther King holiday, communities receive the benefits of the events after they change their political positions. Well, now let's talk about a couple of major events that have gotten even more major. First, Memorial Day and the Indy 500, a bucket list for many, but the greatest spectacle in racing serves as the IndyCar debut for 22-year-old driver Zach Veach. He'll drive the number 40 at the Indy 500 with financial backing from the Indy Women in Tech Championship presented by Guggenheim. The LPGA tournament scheduled for September at the Indy Motor Speedway's infield golf course. Veach has 6 wins and 6 poles in 3 Indy Lights seasons and was the third place finisher in 2016. He joins Carlos Munoz and Connor Daly at the Texas-based AJ Foyt Racing. His number plays homage to Foyt's fourth Indy 500 triumph in 1977. It's 30 years ago, 40 years ago. The committed to the Indy Women in Tech Foundation, along with AJ Foyt Racing and Zach Veach, committed to making positive changes to communities where we work and live. The sponsorship allows us to shine a global spotlight on meaningful robotics and career transition programs that'll develop our workforce through education and job training to support Indy's growing resume for tech innovation, said Dan Towers, president and CEO of Guggenheim Life, and a terrific example of cross-promotion between the Indy 500 and the new LPGA tournament for that city, more importantly, innovative community investment through sports, something everybody, Boston and otherwise, should emulate. How about the other big event, the Kentucky Derby? A couple of weeks before their race weekend, Churchill Downs unveiled the new $16 million clubhouse renovation. The renovation turns the second-level clubhouse area at the park from a large, somewhat shabby space into vibrant, welcoming quarters. Few finishing touches still have to be made, but the May 5th and 6th race will open for a really new, exciting area. Track officials say the modernization has encompassed most of the 95,000-square-foot clubhouse area designed to improve the track experience for the roughly 13,000 guests that typically enter the space on Oaks or Derby Day. and even renovation for facilities and modernization critical for all sports, not just stick and ball, but hoofs, even ones that primary athletes have four legs, as we said, look for increased economic impact and long-term stability as a result. Now let's look at long-term hockey. Bruins in the playoffs, people excited about this time of year. Much to the chagrin of many of its top stars, the NHL officially announced it wouldn't be sending its players to Korea for the 2018 Winter Olympics. The NHL streak of participating in five consecutive Olympic cycles, dating back to 1998, will be snapped, and the NHL made the final decision without coordinating with the IOC or the Players Association. Washington Capitals star Alexander Ovechkin insisted he would still represent Russia next winter, regardless of the NHL stance. And players from all professional hockey leagues around the world are still allowed to participate as of now, making the NHL the only one who has pushed back on that process. Yet, Gary Bettman obviously making a tough decision, but probably the right one. And unlike the NBA, the NHL would have to suspend its season for long periods of time. The NHL has made major commitments to the Olympic movement and has a positive experience from the World Cup, continues to grow the game. We have somebody who will speak about that, as well as everything Bruins, as well as everything Olympic hockey, as well as everything women's, amateur, and professional hockey. Angela Ruggiero, one of the prominent ice hockey players in the world and member of the 2015 Hockey Hall of Fame, four Olympics, U.S. Olympic hockey team, gold medal in 98, silver in 2002 and 2010, bronze in 2016. She had them all. During her storied and pioneering 16-year career, she wore the USA jersey in more games than any other man or woman in USA hockey history, competing in 10 IIHF World Championships and earning the gold medal on four occasions. Named the top executive, or top female player in the world by the Hockey News, and one of the top 16 female athletes in the world by ESPN. She graduated cum laude with a bachelor's degree from Harvard. She was a four-time All-American and national champion, as well as an academic All-American and NCAA top student athlete. Additionally, earned her master's from Emmy from University of Minnesota in sports management and her MBA from Harvard Business School. She's been a member of the International Olympic Committee since 2010, following her election by the world's athletes at the Vancouver Olympics to represent them on the IOC Athletes Commission. Is co-founder of a company called Sports Innovation Lab, which provides newfound clearinghouse-type solutions for sports technology. She obviously has a great perspective on all of this and caught up with her at the Sloan MIT conference. Angela Ruggiero certainly has a lot to say. Rick Caro, MIT Sports Analytics Conference. Again, we have a number of really significant industry leaders. The cacophony has died down. This is the second day. Most of the people who got here yesterday either left disappointed because they didn't get the jobs or because they're going to copy their resume for the next round of deals around here. But notwithstanding that, this has always been one of the biggest conferences in sports. It gets bigger every year. It's not just analytics. It's celebrating our legacy. It's the combination of tech and sports, which is always really important for our international audience. Angela Ruggiero, you know, the first thing it says is Chief Strategy Officer of 2024 LA Bidding. That's important, but that's not all you are, right? You are an athlete of some significant repute, so I would do it, but tell us, you know, why we should care about you in hockey.
I'm a has-been now. I played in four Olympics and was
played
able
in.
To...
You're too kind. How many golds?
I have one gold, two silver, and a bronze.
So you're 100% on medal accumulation.
I like to have the whole spectrum, too.
Yeah, well, that's a great story to tell after the career is over.
Exactly.
But I'm sure not at the time, right? So big deal. Obviously, we celebrate the Olympic history, the Olympic tradition, and you're leveraging your contacts and your passion, not only in the women's sports area, but also Sports Innovation Lab, which you need to talk about as well.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that first.
Yeah, so I've spent the last 7 years on the International Olympic Committee, my last 15 years in sports administration, really understanding and looking globally at what's happening with regards to innovation in sport and with tech as a focus, and realized There's no one source out there to really understand the landscape of what's happening, how it's evolving, and who are really the competitors that are winning and losing in the space. So we started a firm this year that's market research based and will help our customers understand the competitive landscape across all things sports tech and help them make better build buy decisions, investments, recommendations in this area.
Incredible concept here as well, because everybody at this conference, as you hear the cacophony, that is the noise of people with can't-miss ideas trying to sell investors.
Yeah, exactly. Right? And there's no one really that's has an objective third-party voice that can help basically help these people make better decisions when you're getting, you know, 100 decks thrown in front of your desk at any moment, or, hey, we have a real big strategic investment ahead of us, and we need to understand, again, what are the companies out there, but also how do they compare with one another?
The business niche is an incredible niche. You could just see it here.
Yeah.
But what makes the business concept and the business analysis unique? Good housekeeping, seal of approval for tech, but get behind it a little bit.
Well, we call ourselves a lab for a reason. We're actually going to bring these products and services into our company. We have 1,500 companies in our global database currently, cut through across 30 different sectors. And we'll actually do a deep dive analysis, invite those companies in and analyze them along the lines of strength of technology and sports integration. So any customer can, one, understand what's out there, but two, really understand how they compare against one another from, an objective third-party opinion. So we're trying to evangelize the sports tech industry, push the industry forward as a whole. I've seen how tech can change every industry, and obviously I love sports. It's, you know, what I've done my entire life. And if we can give, again, this analytical voice to the industry and help move the needle a little bit quicker, I mean, that's what we want to do.
Have you accomplished the goal of being completely Switzerlandian and agnostic? So everybody knows that, I guess the first step is to appear and be actually neutral, and the second step is that you're a must approve to be in this space.
Yeah,
are you there? Are you there yet?
That's what our goal is. I mean, we're, again, going to be a global research platform for anyone that's looking to understand what's out there. And our core, you know, fundamental principle is this objectiveness, this third-party sort of philosophy where we have no skin in the game, where there's no pay-to-play, where it's simply we want to help people make better decisions.
Well, and all you need to do to define the market niche is just look about 200 yards there. There are two or three individuals that have some assets that are speaking today.
Yeah.
So today is kind of the second level. Look at all those lemmings. I mean, there are hundreds of people that are just walking over there to try to do this. And this, in some indirect way, obviously, a little facetious, it validates what you're doing.
Yeah, no, we again, spending the last decade looking at what was happening and how quickly innovation is occurring and how it's a necessity now to get on a plane and pick up the phone and read literature. Why not organize that in a way that allows these companies to really, in an efficiency play, make better decisions rather than limiting themselves by geography or language?
All right, shifting gears. I hear a little Minnesota accent, a lot more Harvard. So if you retired today and they made you wear a hat, is it Minnesota or is it Boston?
It's Boston.
There you go.
I grew up in L.A.
Okay.
I've lived in Minnesota. I've lived in New York. I've lived in upstate New York. I've lived in, you know, Michigan. I've traveled all over. But I went to school here. I went to Harvard undergrad and business school here and sort of put my stake in the ground now with the Sports Innovation Lab. So.
Well, I'm breaking
it's cold, though. I hate the cold. You never believe it as a hockey player.
No, of course you believe it as a hockey player. And everybody knows that I'm from Florida. And it, by the way, it's 12 degrees out.
It's
not.
It's freezing.
The high is 12 degrees out. We're not even sniffing 12 degrees yet, by the way, which is kind of interesting. And I'm breaking a cardinal rule. Teach a sports law class at Harvard and went to Harvard Law, and I'm told not to associate with Harvard undergrad or Harvard business, but I guess for you it's okay, right?
No, I loved my time there.
Yeah.
I was able to be a student athlete, get a great education while I was training for the Olympics, and went back to HBS after I retired from hockey, and really allowed me to make that transition in a more meaningful way into the sports business world.
And let's probe that for a minute, because this is also going to be distributed back to Boston.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've always found is that you're a lot more disciplined and focused if you come back to grad school, law school, et cetera, after you've done something because you have a better feeling of what you want to do to get out of it.
True? Yeah, and like most athletes, I had to prolong going back to school because I was competing, and you obviously don't, you can't do both at once. So I definitely found I was on the older age of the spectrum going back to business school, but I got so much more out of it. I had real world examples I could apply, and I learned a lot from my younger classmates, but I felt like I was at a point in my life where it really had a tremendous impact on me.
Did your younger classmates treat you as a celebrity? Did they suck up to you?
I wouldn't say they sucked up, but I think they appreciated my my experience in the real world.
She's running for office, by the way. Duval Patrick or whoever it is, move over. Appreciated my experience. That was very well put. That was about as good as that gets. So for the Boston sports fan as well, and then we'll get off of this too, that we've talked about the Boston Marathon, Boston Strong. We've had a lot of our guys, the Patriots, better than nobody, I assume, and the Red Sox as well. What is special about Boston sports? Why is it so passionate? Why is it so avid?
You know, it's a small community, I think, relative to some of the bigger markets in the U.S., and so there's just a sports brings people together, brings communities together, and it helps when your teams win. I think I have to throw that out there.
Sure,
when
it does.
The Red Sox, you know, won, and the Bruins and the Celtics and the Pats have all won in the last decade.
Right.
So that's obviously helpful, but I don't think it's necessary. I think the there's just a bit of a kind of a blue collar mentality here. At the same time, there's the educational piece of universities that bring people together, and they're in commonalities of the tech space, and sports is just, I think, one of those areas where people can rally behind a Super Bowl win and Tom Brady, and you know, it's something to talk about.
I assume you're a Patriot fan.
I am. I grew up in LA, and I wasn't really a big football
fan. 'Cause
there's
nothing, right.
And then there was no team for me.
Right. Viking fan then?
No, I came out here and I just said, you had to be a Pats fan, and look at what they've done. You can't help but
ladies and gentlemen, let's find a bandwagon right to jump on, and this one is pretty significant.
if you've never been a fan and the team that's in front of you is
clearly
like the Patriots, of course, you know, and Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, and that story is just, as an athlete, you can appreciate what they've done to push the, you know, progress in their sport, and
As an athlete, though, and then we'll get into other stuff. What do you appreciate the most out of the Patriots? The sustaining of excellence, the methodical way they go about their business, the interchangeable parts. I mean, there are a lot of that. But what is it?
I think it's sustained excellence. The fact that I think Bill Belichick, I can't remember his exact quote, but the first thing he said to the guys after they won, it was like, you know, something about tomorrow, getting up and getting ready for the next day. And I'm like, they just won. Give them a day off. But I can appreciate that. Again, there's a sense of always wanting to be better. And you have to have that as an athlete. I mean, in life, I think you should have that. I think you should always want to get better each and every day. And it's the hardest to do that when you're on the top.
Best Harvard contemporary athlete. Let's see. Angelo Ruggiero, James Blake, Jeremy Lin, Matt Burke. Where do you fit? And give me some more.
You tell me. I can't rank myself. I'm not going to
throw myself
in there. I missed some. Allison Feaster is here now in basketball.
There
I mean, there's been quite a few. And Isaiah Kazabinski, one of my co-founders,
right.
Of course,
got to
throw him in the mix, 8 years in the NFL. You know, there's so many great athletes that come out of there. And you wouldn't think it because it's Harvard. You know, you're going to focus on sports and, you know, be in the books all the time. But I actually think you're getting more and more really quality athletes that choose to go to Harvard in spite of not being awarded scholarships there because they, you know, value the education.
You were good enough to do anything, go anywhere. Was it, and Harvard undergrad was obviously an important degree, no scholarship, Title IX, help you? The whole structure of where college athletes are for women, talk about that a little bit.
I mean, I wouldn't be here today without Title IX. I think maybe I'd be playing, obviously, in the Olympics and have the opportunity to play internationally, but the whole structure of having a great education through the lens of sport, which is what Title IX is about. It isn't about just giving equal opportunity to men and women in sports, it's across education. So I say, you know, I got to go to an amazing university and my life is fundamentally different because of Title IX, and it's only, you know, been around since 1972, but it's opened so many doors for women and women in business, to be honest, like what we do after sports. What, right. We have the opportunity to play in university, learn about yourself and about setting goals and about all the things that sport teaches men and women, right. And then apply those in life. So I, you know, I look at the success story of women out of college after they've been able to play, and that to me is what Title IX is all about.
All right, let's segue to the Olympics. What's your role with LA 2024?
Yeah, so I'm the chief strategy officer of the LA Olympic bid. We started, you know, a couple years ago. We're at the point we have less than 200 days until the vote in Lima, Peru in September of this year. It's down to just Paris and LA, which is a very tight race, but we're doing everything possible to have the most innovative games, the most sustainable games, cost efficient, athlete friendly games ever. And we spent a lot of time on that because we're actually not building anything permanent. So all of our time and resources is going to be spent on the experience of the spectators, of the fan, and most importantly, the athlete. I mean, I'm the chair of the Global Athletes Commission of the IOC, and where we have to think of all the athletes and their experience, and LA is really taking it to a next level.
It's also a great spin, and I don't demean it by saying it's a spin, but it's a great tactic to say and believe and implement that you are spending time on strategy and fan experience and athlete experience because you also don't have to build things.
Yeah.
Which sends another message as well.
It's the new model, Agenda 2020, President Bach implemented a couple years ago. We want to be more sustainable as an Olympic Games. We don't want white elephants. We don't want cost overruns. And LA is like, we're going to deliver against that. We're going to create the best budget in Olympics history, the most sound budget. We're only building temporary facilities, again, using all existing infrastructure. Might be a little bit more spread out than, but the sustainability, the engagement of the community in LA, and again, the experience that you're going to get from all the constituents that are part of the games is going to be second to none. So, yeah, it's a bit, people could say it's marketing, but if you read our bid book, you'll believe it.
Yeah, read the bid book. Read the bid
book. The whole
book.
Thing, I'm sure.
Believe it. Memorized every word.
I'm sure.
Do you have access to what Budapest did before they pulled out and what Paris's bid looks like now?
So we have Paris's final submission, and, you know, they're a great city. We, you know, who doesn't love going to Paris?
Right.
But at the end of the day, this is something that it's one of the most, it's one of the, this point in time for the IOC is one of the most important votes that the IOC can make.
Right.
And so, without saying anything specific about Paris, is a great city, but you have to look at what we're offering in terms of, again, alignment with Agenda 2020, which is about the future of the Olympic Games, about getting young people involved through social media, through leveraging the tech community in California and America for the service of the Olympic movement. It's about listening to the IOC and saying we're not going to build anything. You know, Paris has to build a massive village. We're using UCLA's existing campus. That's 10,500 athletes, plus an additional 6,000 beds for administrators and coaches. Like, you're literally building a village, and we're saying, no, let's not do the typical model of build something from ground up. Let's use what's there. And UCLA houses and feeds 20,000 people every day.
And the proof of concept, that they already do it. They already know how to do it.
They already know how to do it. So we're, again, the preparations to get them ready for another 20,000 people, next to nothing.
And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, this is an international audience. I understand how many people it reaches. I'm American, though, however, okay? Let's remember that. So as the chief strategy officer, what are you most worried about between now and July?
So the vote, you never know what's going to happen in terms of politics.
Yeah.
I think that can always have an impact. You've seen other bids, and the variables
good
that
ones.
Very good bids.
Yeah.
The variables that you cannot control, what's happening in international policy or what's happening, with regards to terrorism, with regards to, there's certain elements that actually impact how people on the IOC perceive risk. And those are the variables that you can't control. But with regards to the things we can control,
yeah.
I think we have a very solid package that we're putting together to, again, help LA, help America, but also push the Olympic movement forward.
Paid political announcement. It would be unfortunate if after the USOC and Scott Blackmun did such a good job of making peace and establishing credibility, and whether Chicago and New York suffered because that wasn't there or not is irrelevant, that now circumstances may cause some other issues beyond everybody's control.
But that's like sports. We've leveled the playing field in a way. We've spent an enormous amount of time with international engagement the last few years with Scott Blackmun, Larry Probst, Anita DeFrance, myself on the IOC, and really trying to, again, give back to the movement. This is one layer with, you know, Casey Wasserman and Gene Sykes leading the bid to say, look, we're going to go above and beyond. We really want to help shape what the IOC is saying is important to them through our Olympic bid. So, yes, you can't control everything, but the things we can control, we think we're doing a good job.
How's this for a hard political question, especially for you? Did Marty Walsh make the right decision a year and a half ago pulling out from Boston, which gave LA a chance?
I think Mayor Walsh did what he heard the people of Boston saying, which was, hey, we're not ready for the games.
Yeah.
We love the Olympics, but we're not ready for maybe some of the overhaul that would have been needed. We saw it as a way to, you know, exacerbate that, you know, getting the highways upgraded and the T upgraded, and a way to, again, exacerbate your infrastructure plan.
Right.
But LA, the people there are saying 88% public support.
Yeah.
They have that halo effect from hosting 84 games. They're like, we want to come back here. Yeah. We would love that. So there's a difference between Mayor Walsh, who, again, didn't have the benefit of hosting before, where the citizens remembered the social cohesion that comes out of that, and the memories of, wow, that was such a success. So, you know, again, he listened. He's a mayor. He has to listen to what the people are saying, and hopefully one day in the future, Boston will come back and put their ring in the hat again.
Are you going to run for office after all this?
I'm just enjoying, honestly, the last 7 years on the IOC have been amazing. Just getting to know the international landscape, getting to understand. It's kind of like the UN with sports is like, and people can agree on sports to an extent. But no, it's been a tremendous transition for me, being on the ice to off the ice and having an impact on the kind of global sports scene and helping America in ways, helping the athletes in ways that, again, you can only do from that position. So I've enjoyed it. I'm focusing on the Sports Innovation Lab, trying to, again, move the needle in sports tech. And
incredibly important. Title IX, incredibly important.
Yep.
LAOC, incredibly important. Finish with hockey. Do you miss it?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I miss playing all the time. Just being an athlete and being a full, your job is to take care of your body, you get to be on a team, you get to have that sort of adrenaline rush competing against Canada. I mean, I really miss that. You can't mimic it anywhere else. But I'm happy to see my teammates, Hillary Knight's here speaking, you know, happy to see the next generation kind of take that on and be, wearing that American jersey and representing the U.S.
From a business perspective, and you know it, you've trained in it, where is there room for women's professional hockey? Is there an analog to the WNBA and the NBA relative to what the NHL should do, could do, ought to do?
Yeah.
Talk about it.
Absolutely. I think the model you have to look at, but I think any professional league has to start with a sound business model, and I think it's figuring out who the right people are to bring into that. NHL absolutely should be one of the leaders. I think they have really the most to gain with bringing in and engaging with their female fan base.
Have you talked to Gary Bettman or Bill Daly about it?
He's excited. I think it's really just figuring out what is that right model, and what I think we don't want to do is to start a league and have it fail. But you think about all the men's feeder systems, all the men's, you need to put an investment up front into those leagues to get them off the ground. And the NHL has a great brand. They have great local teams. You could you could partner with the Bruins. You could partner with the Montreal Canadiens. You could partner with a number of teams that I think would embrace it. And again, with now this being the coming up on the sixth version of the women's game at the Olympic level, it's here to stay. And so I always look at women's hockey. Obviously, I want women to have the opportunity. But also from a business lens, why wouldn't you open your game up to literally half of the population? Right. If you're looking for market expansion and new ways to engage fans and viewers, you're almost capped in a way on the men's side. And again, if you figure out how to embrace the women's game and through that embrace your fans, I think there's a big opportunity there.
Should the NHL go to Korea in 18?
I believe so. Yeah. I mean, again, it's up to the owners and the league to figure out what that mix is with the IOC and the IIHF, because it is hard on them. They have to stop their season. Yeah. I recognize that. And it's not a perfect situation. But again, if you can leverage that exposure internationally, maybe in China and Korea and Asia, if you can leverage the fans coming back and being more engaged with their respective country, you know, and those players that come back. Again, it's all, I think, being really specific on how to have these players have the opportunity to play for their country, which is the right thing to do. The guys love it. But also from, again, NHL's perspective and the owner's perspective, how do you take advantage of that wave of interest and funnel it back to your team?
Finally, do you sit in front of the TV and question every pass and shot of the Bruins, or do you kind of detach yourself a little bit?
I appreciate when they score great goals. I go, I don't understand how they did it.
Yeah, of course.
But it's fun. It's fun for me because, you know, like when I watch football, I have no clue. I watch and I can sort of appreciate a good throw like a common fan. When I watch hockey,
you really know what's going
on. I can dissect every play, and that's where, you know, I don't want to be bothered. I like actually appreciating the, you know, the nuances of the game. So I cheer for the Bruins. It's fun when they do well. I grew up in LA though, so I'm actually a LA Kings fan.
As opposed to, so the Bruins play the Kings in the Stanley Cup final, who are you rooting for?
Honestly, I'd have to cheer for the Kings.
Wow. Okay.
Because I was a 9-year-old looking up to the Kings, and that never goes away.
Straight answer, ladies and gentlemen. Just for future political, when we roll this one back, and Massachusetts is important for her, you know, the Electoral College, unless it's been changed, just remember that answer.
But remember, where did you grow up, and did you remember the fondness that you had? One of the best things ever happened to me, Marty McSorley played for the Kings, came to my hockey team when I was 9, gave me his hockey stick and signed it. And I was like, I remember that because when I became a role model, taking the time for kids and knowing the impact you can have, and that's who I wanted to be. I wanted to be an LA Kings member.
Well, and clearly Luc Robitaille and
Robitaille
and all of those guys.
I gave him a shout out when I got into the Hall of Fame a couple of years ago. I'm like, Luke, I went to your camp my first week ever playing hockey, and he's laughing because he's like, oh, man, you're dating me now.
Yeah.
But I'm like, no, you made an impact.
Right.
Wayne Gretzky, you know, Steve Duchesne. I mean,
What was that like to be in Toronto for that event?
It was amazing. Yeah. It was amazing.
Your speech was incredible.
Thank you.
By the way, it was a welcome change from, by the way, we'll stop in a minute. The Hall of Fames are great to celebrate the respective games.
Yeah.
But nobody does it better than the NHL.
Yeah.
And everybody brings their families and the stories and the humility and the connection back to the old guys.
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
What you're saying is tradition. There's such tradition there, and there's such respect and reverence for the game of hockey, whether you come from the men's game, the women's game, you're international, you're domestic. And the NHL, I think, and the Hockey Hall of Fame, they all embrace that. And that's one thing I love about hockey players specifically. Again, I'm biased.
Of course you are.
But there's just you're taught to be a team player. You're taught certain rules, and that's how you win hockey games. You have to be a team player. And I think that culture actually permeates everywhere. But, yeah, I agree. I loved that weekend. It was just so special.
And the other piece that I, as a non-hockey player, and then we will stop, okay? But it is kind of interesting because the old guard, the old male kind of set in their ways, put it that way.
Yeah.
the respect that they had for you and the women's game is something to watch. You know, even people who could be perceived as maybe sexist to watch, but it didn't happen. Well,
but
doesn't happen.
But I think it's changing across the board of just saying, if we love hockey, why wouldn't we want to embrace every aspect of hockey and allow everyone to enjoy that? And I think you can, there's like a human element there, like whether you're a boy or a girl or a man or a woman, like we all love the game. And so the old guard, I think, is starting to realize, like, if as the women's game, especially as the game improves and the product on the ice continues to evolve, it's nice to see that evolution.
Right, what else do you want to talk about? By the way, that you know that's not my done. Right, done. When she says done, done.
Well,
don't screw with her.
I don't want to end.
Done. By the way, obviously you know my style, this first class. Angela Ruggiero, really appreciate your dynamism, your entrepreneurial skills, and good luck with the company and good
Thank
luck
you.
With everything else.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks.
You listen to Angela Ruggiero and you want to start playing hockey. You also understand the challenges and the victories of women professional athletes, women hockey players, corporate sponsors in the female community, startup, tech, MBA at Harvard. It's a very interesting and very diverse resume. Trust us, we will hear more from her in the future. That's our show today, ladies and gentlemen. We'd love to thank Angela for giving of her time so generously. We'd also like to thank Jason Levine and Tanner Simpkins for putting this show together. And for you listening, we have playoffs, we have NBA starting, we have the draft, we have the fallout of the Boston Marathon from a business perspective, and so much more next week. Why don't you join us when we go Beyond the Scoreboard?